The Brantford General Hospital recently announced in a media release that their emergency department is facing extreme pressures with staffing shortages while also experiencing a high volume of patients needing care, which is obviously resulting in longer wait times for patients. So here to talk to me about that is Martin Rowe, VP of Clinical Services and Chief Nursing Executive for the Brant Community Healthcare System. So thank you for taking some time to talk to me this afternoon, Martin.
Thanks, Andy. I appreciate the opportunity.
I wanted to start by asking how COVID-19 cases have been. Obviously, we've been seeing restrictions being eased, so I was just curious to see if that has been having any effect on it.
I mean, certainly this during this wave, our volumes of COVID patients have been lower than past waves. We've been caring for 20 to 25 patients who are COVID positive at any given time, and we have had I think because of, as you say, the restrictions have been lifted in across society, we have seen some outbreaks within the facility. For the most part, those are resolving now. But the seventh wave has been a little bit different from the previous couple of waves.
And do you expect cases to begin to rise in the coming months with cold and flu season around the corner?
Certainly, this will be the time of season where we see increase in respiratory illness and respiratory isolation, whether that be COVID or some other respiratory illness. We certainly expect and anticipate that. The typical time of flu season is beginning in the fall and carrying on through the winter. So certainly we plan for that.
And can you just give a quick briefing on how people can stay safe during the higher cold and flu season months?
Yeah, I mean, I would take the approach that we've taken during the waves of COVID. If you're going out in the community, you're going to be in close contact. Of course, wear a mask. Hand hygiene remains a critical element of your safety plan, and social distance where possible. As we normalize, as people relax, I think it's easy to forget those things. But I think if you keep those three fundamental principles in place, you'll stay safe.
And just getting back to the media release about the extreme pressures being faced by the emergency department, would you say that COVID-19 is the biggest factor in those pressures?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure we know the answer. I think, the prolonged requirement for healthcare providers and all members of society to maintain that vigilance and to have these profound changes in their day-to-day lives, I think is definitely a big part of it. Some of what we're seeing is within our staff, we're seeing people who are tired and people who are stressed, and our staff really have demonstrated heroic resilience and a really unwavering commitment to the community throughout the waves of the pandemic, which as we all know is now. Very long, 3 years, nearly 2.5 years, and there are elements of burnout that we're seeing. So while I would attribute it to COVID to some degree, that's not the only factor. It's just prolonged high anxiety, high crisis care is hard to maintain, and I think that's some of what we're seeing. We're also seeing high volumes of patients presenting in the ED. Those we do attribute somewhat to COVID, and that people may have delayed some care during the pandemic, and now that they're either they've become more ill or they perceive that things are changing, they're now seeking out the care and they're actually coming to the hospital, and they are actually quite ill. So we're seeing those volume pressures, and we're also seeing higher acuity, so patients who are sicker. So I think those things we can attribute to the COVID environment.
And you talked about staff burnout or just being in high stressful situations, I guess. Are there any current solutions that you guys are using to combat that?
We do have a wellness initiative that we have in the hospital, both to support staff with mental health issues and just general wellness and help people take care of themselves. We also have a vacation policy whereby we're really encouraging people to take their time off and be with their families. So those are the things that we're working on. And then to support the staff, we're actually looking at different ways of delivering care. So as we get the sick calls, we maybe have some alternative strategies. We are utilizing our new grad guarantee program to onboard new nurses. We're using a clinical extern program to support the laddering of nursing students to become full-time nursing employees at the hospital, and we're also utilizing internationally educated nurses, in addition to some other strategies that are really essentially there to build up our teams and allow for people to actually take their time away from work.
And can you just talk to me about how the staffing shortages have been affecting the department?
Sure. I mean, it's much bigger than the department, as I'm sure you know, Andy. It's a national crisis. It's an international crisis. And I'd say most hospitals across the province of Ontario are dealing with it. So, you know, really at this point, the entire organization is under significant pressure with regards to staffing. I would say most areas of the hospital are short-staffed on most shifts. So staffing shortages combined with the high volume of patients needing care, you know, is creating, you know, service level pressures. At times, there are areas of the ED in particular where we don't have enough staff to service all of the areas of the department, meaning that we move people around so that we can provide emergent care. And this means that sometimes wait times are prolonged, and people may be in the waiting room, you know, a number of hours before they are brought in to see a physician. If patients are highly acute or critical, they'll be seen at first, and they'll be seen immediately if needed. But lower acuity patients may experience longer wait times than we would hope for, and we would usually expect.
And do you guys have a system to track which areas of the hospital might be understaffed?
Yeah, absolutely we do. We track it every day. We meet 2-3 times a day. We review it. We mobilize staff, move staff around, change models of care. This is a very much a dynamic situation that requires around-the-clock monitoring and around-the-clock management.
And you talked about the longer wait times. Is there an average that shows you how long people have been waiting and just how much longer they are waiting?
Yeah, so just as a barometer, I would say this time last year, so July of last year, I was used as a barometer, it might be typical to wait for 4.5 hours to see a physician in the emergency department. And this time this year, same time this year, it's over 5 hours.
Okay, so very drastic difference there. Could you just talk to me about how the public can maybe help out with this issue? Talking about when it's essential to visit the emergency department versus maybe trying to seek help in other places?
Yeah, firstly, I would say, you know, please be reassured that we're here to help. We're here to care for people. Wait times may be a little longer, but if people need immediate care, we're here to provide that care. What we're asking of the public is to primarily, please be kind and be patient to our staff, physicians, and volunteers as they continue to work tirelessly to provide the care required. And I'd say if you're not experiencing a medical emergency, there are other places that might be better options before coming to the hospital. So obviously, family physicians, if the issue can wait, you know, till the following business day. We have an urgent care facility at the Willett in Paris for those types of needs. There's also Health Connect Ontario, which is a government-sponsored 24-hour phone or web chat. I just want to reiterate, if people are experiencing a medical emergency, call 911. You'll be brought to the emergency department. You will get the care you need. You know, the other options around the region would be other emergency departments or other urgent cares, walk-in clinics, etc.
And you sort of touched on it there, but lastly, could you just tell us about how important the jobs are that get done throughout the hospital by frontline healthcare workers who are working throughout these pressures being faced by, you mentioned, it's a national crisis. So can you just take some time to appreciate them for the work they do?
Absolutely. I mean, we can't say enough to extend our appreciation to all frontline healthcare workers tirelessly committing themselves to the care of the community and our patients. And, you know, it really have demonstrated unwavering commitment and I would say tremendous resilience throughout the pandemic. And it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, these jobs are tough at the best of times, and right now is not the best of times. So people are, you know, people are sometimes struggling, and we're supporting them to come to work, and we're also trying to support them to take their time away from work. So I would say anyone who knows a healthcare worker, please thank them. You know, we're so long into this, and people are, I think, to some degree, tired of talking about it. But, you know, we should really remember that for you know, over 2 years now, these people have been here working, committed to the community and well-being of our patients.
For sure. Martin, that was awesome. I want to thank you again for taking some time to talk to me this afternoon. And hopefully we do see some of these pressures ease. And thank you again to you and your staff for all the hard work you guys do.
Thanks, Andy. I really appreciate the time to send this message out.